You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we are back here. It is Purple Friday, the last Purple Friday of the regular season for the Baltimore Ravens, and not just any Purple Friday. It is the first day of 2021. Of course, New Year's Eve was last night. We are now in a new year. We can wave 2020 goodbye, which I think a lot of people are looking forward to doing, just because 2020 was not the best year for a lot of people, but we are now in a new year, and for Baltimore, that means that nothing has changed. The Ravens still have one goal, and that is to beat the Cincinnati Bengals in Week 17 and to get into the 2020 playoff picture. They already are in it, but to secure a spot in the 2020 playoff picture, that has been the goal, and for Baltimore, it's something where, look, they have the opportunity. Calais Campbell said that they need to earn the right to get into the big dance. They had a 6-5 record. They're on a 4-game winning streak now. And here we are talking about a win-and-in scenario for the Baltimore Ravens in a very, very stacked AFC. One really good football team, whether it's the Browns or the Dolphins or the Colts or the Titans or the Ravens, one of those really good teams will not be making the postseason. So hopefully the Ravens are not that team, because it'd be of historic proportions if the Ravens finish 11-5 and still do not make the playoffs. But fortunately for Baltimore, that scenario can no longer happen. So in this first segment, we'll be talking about an injury update for the Baltimore Ravens, how Thursday's practice session looked, as well as the Ravens in their transaction move. Someone we talked about yesterday on the show has signed with Baltimore's practice squad. And the Ravens also made another transaction, so we'll be getting into all of that in the first segment. Then in the second and third segments, we'll be talking about this game preview, the last game preview of the 2020 regular season for the Baltimore Ravens traveling to Cincinnati to take on the Bengals in Week 17. We'll start with the Ravens offense against Cincinnati's defense, and then we'll talk about the Bengals offense going up against the Baltimore defense. So with all that being said, we'll jump right in here. But before we do that, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere there's a podcast. We are there waiting Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens and my personal account at KOstreicher34. So with all that being said, let's jump right into the Ravens injury and transaction news, starting off with the injuries, then moving into the transactions. The Ravens had a couple of people return to practice, which was a very good sign for the Ravens. Both of them cornerbacks, and another cornerback actually was upgraded to full participation. So we'll first start off with the people who did not participate. Mark Ingram missed his second straight day with an illness. Patrick McCurry missed his second straight day with a back injury. Anik Ngakoue missed his second straight day with a thigh injury. Willie Snead missed his second straight day with an ankle injury. Brandon Williams was not injury-related. He did not participate. But Marlon Humphrey and Jimmy Smith both returned to practice, and this is huge news for the Ravens, especially on the Jimmy Smith front. Smith is somebody who has missed the last couple of games for Baltimore. He's a huge part of what they do on defense, and we'll actually talk about him in the transaction part of this segment just a couple minutes from now. But for the Ravens, there's just a lot to be happy about here for these cornerbacks, because the Ravens, ever since week two when Tavon Young goes down, it's just been cornerback going down after cornerback going down, and it's been a revolving door there. So for Baltimore to potentially have their top three corners and Marlon Humphrey, Jimmy Smith, and Marcus Peters back on the field in week 17, hopefully they're healthy enough to do it. If they're not, I'd probably rest them just in case, but still, that's a big development. So Humphrey and Smith both returned to practice as limited participants. Calais Campbell had a full day of practice, as did Marcus Peters, a full day of practice for him. So the Ravens injury report, you would like to see guys like McCurry and Ngakoue and Snead back, but those are guys who, again, if the injuries are kind of in a day-to-day, week-to-week thing, you probably want to rest them, just because the Ravens hopefully are going to beat Cincinnati even with those guys. So for Baltimore, if they can get Jimmy Smith, if they can get Marcus Peters back and they're forced to play without maybe McCurry and Ngakoue, it's a trade. I don't know if it's a very good trade, because McCurry has been playing really well, so is Ngakoue, but still, the Ravens are happy at least to get some of their players back here. But in terms of the transaction news, the Ravens did end up signing Jayron Kearse to their practice squad, much needed safety depth for this team. The Ravens didn't really have a ton of it outside of Deshaun Elliott and Chuck Clark. We saw Jordan Richards get put on the moon against the Giants because Deshaun Elliott was forced from that game against New York with an injury. So Curse is somebody who is big. He can cover tight ends really well. He can kind of be that safety backup, play the dime role, but he's somebody who Baltimore will be happy to have, and especially as a practice squad call-up for the first couple of weeks. But the bigger news for the Ravens is with Sam Cook going on the reserve COVID list with an inconclusive test, the Ravens did not have a punter on their roster. So the Ravens signed Johnny Townsend off the Kansas City Chiefs practice squad, giving Baltimore insurance in case Cook cannot play Sunday. Cook has played in 239 consecutive games for the Ravens. He has never missed a start for this Baltimore Ravens team ever since coming into the league out of Nebraska. The last punter to punt for Baltimore not named Sam Cook was Dave Zastadil on January 1st, 2006. For Townsend, he set the school record for punting average at Florida, then was a fifth-round pick by the Raiders back in 2018. He punted for one season for them. He averaged 43.2 yards per punt and then spent time with the Giants during training camp in 2019. So if Cook can't play, it would be a big blow to Baltimore, but the Ravens have someone who they think is a good replacement for him. And nobody can be Sam Cook, obviously, but having an actual punter on the roster really does help. And then finally for the Ravens, they signed Jimmy Smith to a one-year extension worth up to $5 million. I believe the specifics are he gets $2.5 million guaranteed, and then $2 million in signing bonus. It actually might be the other way around. It could be $2 million guaranteed and $2.5 million in signing bonus, but overall, I think it's a good deal for Baltimore. I mean, Jimmy Smith is somebody who was so important to the defense. He just has trouble staying healthy. That's been the big knock on Jimmy Smith. It's, all right, can he stay healthy? Can he play 16 games for Baltimore? But the Ravens aren't necessarily relying on him to be that 16-game, number one corner, lockdown guy for them. You know, he plays a role for Baltimore that's really important. They like him as that safety guy, safety corner hybrid who can cover tight ends, kind of. It gives them insurance, and the Ravens love to have that depth at the cornerback position. So a $5 million deal for Smith. I was already on board with re-signing him in general, but now that you get him for that cheap, I believe Smith was signed to a one-year up to $6 million deal in the 2020 offseason. So for the Ravens, they get him a bit cheaper, and hopefully his play will still be up to the standard that Baltimore knows it can be up to. And for the Ravens, they know what they have in Jimmy Smith. Over the course of his career, he's played in 118 total games. He started 88 of those games. I mean, he's somebody who has 356 total tackles. He has 14 interceptions, 2 touchdowns. Again, the issue with Jimmy Smith is that it's games played with him. Games played in a season. He's only played in 16 games twice throughout his career in the NFL, and that career spans since 2011. So since 2011, only 2 full seasons of 16 games, and his last full 16-game season was in 2015 with Baltimore. So the Ravens can get that good of a style of play from Jimmy Smith because the style he plays, it again, fits the Ravens system, and that again, system fit is always huge for a team, and so with Jimmy Smith, that'll always be key. But again, if he can stay on the field for, let's even call it 13 games next season. Right now he's played in 11. If it stays that way and he doesn't play in week 17, then oh well. If he does play in week 17, that'll be 12 for Smith. But over the course, so since 2016, we'll start there. Jimmy Smith, 11 games in 2016, 12 games in 2017, 12 games in 2018, 9 games in 2019, and 11 games so far in 2020. So again, if you can get 13, 14 games out of Jimmy Smith, that's an ideal scenario for the Ravens. But for right now, they got a bargain deal with Jimmy Smith. 3 really nice moves for them. Obviously, the Johnny Townsend move was more of a, all right, our punter's not going to be able to play in week 17, maybe. So the Ravens just going to have to go with what they have here in terms of injuries, in terms of who's on the COVID list and whatnot, but they should be in pretty good shape here to take on the Bengals, and we're going to head into our first break now, and when we return, we'll be talking about the Ravens offense going up against the Bengals defense in our first segment of our game preview for Week 17, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. And we are back with our second segment of this Locked On Ravens Purple Friday edition. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still here with you. And we just talked about the Ravens injury news and transaction notes, but now let's talk about this game that's going to be happening between the Baltimore Ravens and the Cincinnati Bengals in Week 17. And we did talk about already just a little bit. We had a mini preview back on Tuesday about what this game would be like. So now we're going to jump into our full game preview. And so talking about this full game preview for the Ravens and the Bengals week 17, let's first again look back to week 5 in that 27-3 victory the Ravens had over the Bengals at home. Obviously, this game in week 17 is away. And look at just a little bit of the team stats. I know in our mini preview on Tuesday, we looked a bit at individual stats, but looking at team stats for both the Ravens and the Bengals, I do just kind of want to read down a bit of what happened and why the game turned out the way it did. And one of the first big reasons for the Ravens offense, at least, is that they outgained the Bengals by over 100 total yards. The Ravens had 332 total yards, while the Bengals had just 205. The Ravens also were just under 50% on third down. They went 7 of 15 on third down scenarios, which during times this season, the Ravens have actually struggled in third down scenarios on offense and on defense too, but we'll talk about that in the final segment. So in order to have a good game against the Bengals here, the Ravens do have to be able to efficiently convert on both third and fourth down. The Ravens were actually 0 for 1 on fourth down in week 5, and it's key because it keeps the opposing offense off the field. It keeps the opposing defense on the field for longer. And I think for the Ravens, it just makes things easier. It makes life easier in how the Ravens can get into those third down situations. We've talked about it on this show before, but getting into manageable second down situations, the Ravens have been one of the worst first down teams in the league. At least that was the case. They've gotten a lot better over the past couple of weeks on their winning streak, but the Ravens, they have had a streak over the course of 2020 to kind of go out and get maybe 1 yard on first down, maybe 2 yards on first down. The Ravens are an efficient football team when they run the football. And look, the Ravens offense, it's really picked up steam over these last couple of weeks. The offense we saw in week 5 against Cincinnati is nowhere near what the Ravens offense is right now in week 17. It's literally night and day between those two offenses. But the Ravens, the reason their offense is working so well is because they're getting into 2nd-and-5 situations, 2nd-and-2 situations. Those are the types of situations where maybe instead of a 2nd-and-11 or a 2nd-and-8, and again, those extra yards, football is a game of inches. It's a game of yards. And for the Ravens, getting into those 3rd-and-short situations, as long as they are getting good yardage on first down to get into easy second down situations, that gives you a better shot to be able to get into a manageable third down situation where Baltimore can hit you with play action on 3rd-and-2. They can hit you with a QB sneak on a 3rd-and-1. They can hit you with an RPO. That's what makes the offense so dangerous. It's a guessing game with this Ravens offense, and that is the key, one of them at least, for this Ravens offense in week 17. Another key thing for the Ravens, at least in this game in week 5 here, is the Ravens outrushed the Bengals 161-70. Now, the distribution of these carries is the key thing I want to point out here, is that Mark Ingram led this team with 11 carries for 57 yards. He averaged 5.2 yards per carry. But then we get into the wild yards per carry averages of a few players here. Devin Duvernay and J.K. Dobbins both had just one carry apiece. With Devin Duvernay, you're like, all right, yeah, that's fair. It was a reverse play. It was a nice little sweep for him. He got 42 yards on that play. So he had a 42 yards per carry average, one carry for 42 yards. J.K. Dobbins had one carry for 34 yards. And then Gus Edwards had 7 carries for 25 yards. Lamar Jackson, 2 for 3. And Marquise Brown, 1 for 1. And then Robert Griffin III had a nice little kneel down at the end. But so for the Ravens, what we've seen over the last couple weeks is Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, Lamar Jackson. What we saw in this game was Mark Ingram, a little bit of Gus Edwards, and 37 pass attempts from Lamar Jackson. That is not how this Ravens offense operates now. You're seeing 15 carries for J.K. Dobbins, maybe 13 for Gus Edwards, another 10 or 12 for Lamar Jackson. That's where this team has their success. And the offensive line, credit to them as well, they are playing really good football. But the Ravens, they had Ronnie Stanley and Nick Boyle in this one. They will not have Ronnie Stanley and Nick Boyle in the game in week 17 against Cincinnati. So that's a little bit of a difference. But for the Ravens, the offensive line is arguably playing better now than it was with Stanley and Boyle. And look, don't get me wrong. I'd much rather have Ronnie Stanley on the line than DJ Fluker and have Orlando Brown Jr. move back to right tackle. But what the Ravens offensive line is doing, you just can't ignore what they're doing right now. But again, J.K. Dobbins 1 for 34. We're going to see J.K. Dobbins get quite a bit more carries than that. He is arguably the lead back in this offense now as a rookie. And as we've seen throughout history, Baltimore does not really like to give key roles to rookies early. You know, Devin Duvernay, James Prochet, we've seen it a lot. Malik Harrison had a bigger role earlier in the season. We've kind of seen that go up and down in terms of snap counts, but J.K. Dobbins has proven that he is too electric to keep off the field in key situations. So good on him for showing the coaches, and good on the coaches for realizing that J.K. Dobbins needs to be in the game a bit more than he was in Week 5. Another key point of emphasis for this Ravens team in this game, something that they were able to do really well, is not turn the ball over a lot. The Ravens won the turnover battle 3-1. The Bengals had 3 turnovers. The Ravens had 1. Lamar Jackson was the culprit of that turnover. He did have an interception, but that was on a play where Lamar Jackson didn't see the defender. And usually when you look at a Lamar Jackson interception where you're like, okay, this was a bad decision by Lamar Jackson, he doesn't see an underneath defender creep up towards his target. We've seen it multiple times against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and we definitely see it happen a little bit too much for Lamar Jackson. I think that is a part of his game where Lamar Jackson has to get a bit better at just diagnosing underneath coverages. And this was another scenario of that. Rookie Logan Wilson made a phenomenal play. He looked like he was blitzing, then he dropped off into the underneath part of the middle of the field. And Lamar Jackson was looking, I can't remember who he was looking for. I think it might have been Miles Boykin, but he was looking for a receiver. And Logan Wilson cut underneath the football and picked off the pass. So it was a nice play by Wilson, but the Ravens didn't have any turnovers after that, and it was simple. You know, you don't turn the ball over in the NFL, you usually have a pretty good shot to win the game. It's not a guarantee, but we've seen Lamar Jackson single-handedly lose the Ravens games with turnovers, like the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. A bunch of turnovers for him in that game. The first game against Pittsburgh at home in 2020, 2 really big interceptions in Baltimore territory, 1 fumble in the Pittsburgh red zone. Those are really big key turnovers, but for the Ravens, not having those against the Bengals, I mean, it obviously helps. Again, this is a week-to-week league. We've seen the Jets go out 2 weeks in a row and really dominate their opponents. And, you know, some of the scores won't make it look like they dominated, but the Jets, the winless Jets 2 weeks ago, now have 2 wins because they fought hard. In 2017, the Bengals, out of the playoff picture, come into Baltimore and beat the Ravens at their own game, denying them a shot at the playoffs. The Ravens have to be careful. The Bengals aren't going to be playing sloppy football because, you know, they're just like, all right, we want the draft pick. We're going to tank and lose out here. Maybe that's what some fans are thinking, but the players on NFL teams, they want to win. They don't care about draft picks. They don't care about who's getting the number one pick or this pick or that pick. The Bengals are going to be playing hard, and the Bengals defense, you know, they're not all that good, but they're playing better as of late. Jesse Bates is playing really well. He's honestly should have been a Pro Bowler, but the Pro Bowl voting is all out of whack and weird now. Von Bell leads the team with 111 tackles. Jesse Bates is next behind him with 101. Former Raven Josh Bynes with 89 and Jermaine Pratt with 81. So again, this team is a team that's going to come out and fight. In terms of sacks, Carl Lawson leads this team with 5.5. Then Sam Hubbard and Jordan Evans are next with 2. So they're not an overly big threat is a pass rushing team, so the Ravens offensive line should have little to no problem stifling the Bengals pass rush, and that should be good for Lamar Jackson because he is one of the best clean pocket passers in the entire NFL. Another thing the Ravens did well in this game from a team perspective is they took advantage of their opportunities in the red zone. They went 2-for-2 in the red zone, and you know, you see 2-for-2 and you might be like, all right, well, they only were in there 2 times, whatever. The Ravens have struggled sometimes in the red zone. Again, they've gotten a lot better. Lamar Jackson is one of the best red zone passers in NFL history. And he's only 23. He's not even 24 yet. So for the Ravens, he has thrown 45 touchdown passes and 0 interceptions in the red zone throughout his NFL career. But it's crazy because the Ravens in the red zone have struggled at times this season in 2020. Again, it's been something where they've had some success, and then other times in other games, they've just been abysmal. One of those games is against the Tennessee Titans, where I believe they went 1-for-4 in the red zone, leaving a ton of points on the board, and it ultimately cost them the game. If they had scored on just one of those red zone possessions, a touchdown instead of a field goal, they would have won the game. So for Baltimore, 2-for-2 in the red zone, you look at it, it's unimpressive. Okay, 2 times, whatever. They didn't go 0-for-2. They went 2-for-2. And if the Ravens can keep that up in Week 17, if they can come out of the red zone with 7 points instead of 3, it'll put the game away easier. It'll keep the Bengals out of it, and it'll make the Bengals close down parts of their offense because they have to get back into the game. In the NFL, so many parts of the game go hand-in-hand with other parts. I've talked about the run game into the pass game, but even offense and defense, they go hand-in-hand together. If the offense can get out to an early lead, win in the red zone, then the defense doesn't have to worry about the run game as much, and that helps a ton. So for Baltimore, a really, really big chance for them to go out, dominate on offense, keep the momentum for the playoffs, and for Baltimore, it should be a game where the offense dominates. We're going to head into our final break now, but when we return, we'll be talking about the Ravens defense going up against that Bengals offense, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. And we return here with our final segment of this Locked On Ravens Purple Friday edition here on New Year's Day. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still here with you. And we're going to now talk about the Baltimore defense going up against the Bengals offense. And obviously, the biggest change here for the Ravens defense or the Bengals offense, it has to be the change of quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals. And it wasn't a change made by the Bengals because of performance. It was a change made by injury. Joe Burrow, unfortunately, goes down with a knee injury. It ends his season. And honestly, it's a really tough injury because, look, I think a lot of people can agree with me here in the fact that the Ravens and the Bengals and the Browns and even the Steelers, the whole AFC North is going to be so, so good. Maybe even as early as next year. It already is really good, but just with Lamar Jackson, with Baker Mayfield, with Joe Burrow, with whoever the Steelers draft or decide to trade for, sign, whatever, there are really good teams in the AFC North, and Joe Burrow is one of the bright spots. You never want to see an injury, even to a division rival, any player. You never want to see injuries in the NFL. So Burrow had a really good rookie year, completing 264 passes out of 404 for 2,688 yards, 13 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. And honestly, with the Bengals offensive line and how they were playing, I had kind of talked about it earlier before Joe Burrow had actually gotten injured and said the Bengals really made a mistake not protecting Joe Burrow. They had an opportunity to sign guys in free agency, to draft people, and they literally just did not fix what was one of the biggest weaknesses on their team in 2019. And I give the Cleveland Browns a lot of credit, kind of going semi-off topic here for a second, because the Browns' offensive line was atrocious in 2019. So what do they do in the 2020 offseason? They go out and they sign a guy in Jack Conklin to a big contract to shore up the right tackle spot. They draft Jedrick Wills in the first round of the draft for those bookend tackles that you can have. And then they also have one of the best right guards, if not the best right guard in the league, in Wyatt Teller. They kind of stumbled upon him, a diamond in the rough there. So the Browns have really gone out and upgraded their offensive line. They also had mainstays Joel Bitonio and J.C. Treader on that line. But for the Bengals, they did not do that, and so Joe Burrow does go down. But for the Ravens, they're going to have to face off against Brandon Allen, who impressed against the Texans, and is somebody who the Bengals have been going back and forth between Ryan Finley and Brandon Allen. It looks like Brandon Allen will be the guy. And the biggest thing with Brandon Allen is that he holds the ball for a lot less time than I think a lot of quarterbacks do. I think his average time of release was around 3 seconds, so it's something where they were throwing a lot of screens against Houston. They were doing a lot of different short passing game concepts, and that's something the Ravens have somewhat struggled to defend this year. The Ravens are a blitz-happy defense. Don Martindale's defense is very blitz-heavy, so against blitzes, what is the most effective counter? It is screens. You get the guys up at the line, you force those defenders upfield, and then once they're near the quarterback or something of that nature, they'll just dump it off, and there will be maybe two or three defenders downfield, and that causes trouble. So the Ravens are going to have to be very disciplined. People are going to have to read screens if a blitzer is coming and diagnoses a screen. He has to get out on that screen catcher. And we've seen Baltimore be a lot better at it. The Chiefs killed the Ravens with screens. A lot of different teams early in the season killed the Ravens with screens, but now the Ravens actually are a lot better at defending. But a few things in terms of team stats from Week 5 on the defensive side of the ball I do want to get into. The Bengals were just 3-for-16 on third down. They were 2-for-3 on fourth down, but 3-for-16 on third down is a crazy number. The Ravens' defense has struggled to defend on third downs, on fourth downs, but for the Ravens, it's going to be big to stop the Bengals on third down because it makes a ton of sense, right? If the Bengals are getting off the field in three and outs, it gives Baltimore the advantage to get the opposing defense back on the field to make them tired. The offense obviously isn't scoring points. The opposing offense isn't scoring points. It all just goes hand in hand. And I think one of the crazier parts about all of this is that actually in terms of time of possession, usually for the Ravens, if they're winning the game by a lot, if they win a game, even 27-3 like they did, in week 5 against the Bengals. Usually the Ravens are on top in the time of possession battle, but Cincinnati in week 5 held the ball for 39 minutes and 39 seconds, while the Ravens held the ball for 25 minutes and 21 seconds. So the defense was actually on the field for longer, but they still held the Bengals to just 3 points, which is crazy. And it actually speaks to how dominant the Ravens defense was, because with more time on the field, they still held the Bengals to just 3 points. And then I think the last thing I kind of want to talk about here is the fact that the Ravens, and this is a team award, honestly, the Ravens had 4 penalties for 25 yards in this game. That today, you know, you look at the last 4 weeks, last month or two, the Ravens have been absolutely killed with penalties. It's honestly been a whole season thing for Baltimore, but the Ravens, 4 penalties for 25 yards in this game. You want 0 penalties, but for the Ravens, it's just unbelievable. For Baltimore, the referees haven't been good for them. They've had poor execution. But 4 penalties for 25 yards, and I keep saying it because it's just like, wow, you know, this season for the Ravens hasn't been great in terms of penalties, but this was one of the games in week 5 where the Ravens came out, played disciplined football, the offense, the defense, the special teams combined. It's crazy, just 4 penalties. And that's something the Ravens have to do in week 17 in order to win this football game, because with Baltimore, the penalties, it's a killer. It kills drives. It helps opposing drives. We saw the Ravens get 3 consecutive sacks last week against Daniel Jones and the Giants, and then a special teams penalty puts the Giants back on the field and the Ravens defense back on the field. It is an automatic first down. Third down roughing the passer calls, illegal formations, holdings. It's just everything with this team. So for the Ravens to have 4 penalties for 25 yards in this game in week 5, just absolutely crazy stuff, and that's something the Ravens will have to do in Week 17 in order to pick up a victory. But in terms of final scores, I've been kind of going back and forth. I put a couple final scores out there. I'm going to go with the Ravens 34, the Bengals 17. This is a game I just think Baltimore has so much on the line for. They're going to come out ready to play. The Bengals, again, they're going to come out ready to play too, but it's just Brandon Allen, I think, is going to be just eaten alive by this defense. The offense is going to have a field day, and those things combined, I think the Ravens do pull out a victory here. But that's all that I have for you today. When we get back here on Monday, we'll be talking about everything that happened in that Ravens and Bengals game, so stay tuned for that, and I will see you on Monday.